Good morning. Today's daf in Me'ilas Yud Beis. We are on Yud Alef Amud Beis. We have just a little bit to cover in order to get to the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud. We're at the two dots. Nesachim b'tchilam alam b'hem. We're speaking now about the Nesachim. Wine and blood has been our discussion since yesterday's Mishnah on Yud Alef Amud Alef, and it's subject to the laws of Me'ilah. As it relates to blood, so that we already covered yesterday, the Mishnah taught us that blood is not subject to Me'ilah. Blood is not subject to Me'ilah. We're talking about the blood of a carbon, obviously. The blood of a carbon is excluded from the din of Me'ilah, and we learned that based on drushas. The Gemara gave us a number of drushas to arrive us to that point. We have Psukim in the Torah. We have Svaras as well. Okay, the Tanayim, Amoraim. Everyone gets into the act involved as it involves the exclusion of blood of a carbon from the din of Me'ilah, despite the fact that it goes up onto the Mizbech. And it could easily have made the argument it's Kachi Hashem. It's certainly going up onto the Mizbech, but nevertheless, it is not subject to Me'ilah. That's a given. There is a din derabanan of Me'ilah after the blood drains its way out of the Azara. So when it goes into the Nachal Kidron, so there's going to be a din Me'ilah derabanan. As we discussed yesterday and explained yesterday, it is basically open for public usage. In the Kidron Valley, anyone can go there and take from it. Min HaTorah, if the Chachamim would have left it up to the Din Torah, everyone would have. But then everyone would have walked away with a bit of an erroneous conclusion. Something we're using the base of Mikdash for the purposes of a carbon, and it's going to be totally devoid of any kind of Me'ilah. And it leads people to the wrong conclusions. Therefore, the Chachamim slapped a din derabanan of Me'ilah on the blood after it deposits into the Nachal Kidron. That is the summary of the blood. We are now past that, and now we're moving on to the yayin. Yayin also is poured onto the mizbech. It's yayin comes generally as part of the nesachim, not generally, only. Yayin comes as part of the nesachim of the libations. Then, as such, the yayin is going to be poured down down the pipes. There are two pipes that exist in the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. One pipe is reserved for water on Sukkos, Nisuch HaMayim, which is discussed in the Masechta of Sukkah. Makes sense. Fifth parak over there. But we're discussing wine as it's poured down the other pipe, and that is for the purposes of Nisuch HaYayin. So for this wine now, is it going to be subject to Me'ilah, yes or no? The Mishnah says, in this regard, yes. The Mishnah, if you remember yesterday, said Nesachim b'tchilasam alam behem, that the Nesachim at its beginning is subject to Me'ilah. However, yard l'shisim, but once it goes into the shisim, in alam behem. Okay, now the shisim are basically some sort of small little cavity that exists underneath the mizbech, which basically collects the wine as it's being poured down over there. And the Mishnah is telling us that after the wine is poured, so it's no longer going to be subject to Me'ilah. In this regard, we understand. And once something is nasa mitzvah, so once the mitzvah has been performed, so then the din of Me'ilah is removed. Once the wine is poured down, the din of Me'ilah is going to be removed. That's the Mishnah, and we just have a little bit of Gemara to cover on this topic. The Gemara now, as we start on Yud Alef Amud Beis, at the two dots right halfway down at the Amud. So, at first glance, when you learn a Mishnah like we just did, and you compare it to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzedek, which we're about to do, we're going to see together that l'chora, the Mishnah, is not following the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzedek. What is his position? D'tanya, the Gemara quotes the Brisa, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzedek Omer, lo katanayim ben kevesh l'mizbech. There was a small compartment, right? The lul usually is a term that describes a chicken coop. Obviously, over here, we're just talking about the physical structure. It just simply means that there was some sort of compartment that was between the kevesh and the mizbech, between the ramp and the actual mizbech itself, b'ma'aravashal kevesh, and it was towards the west of the ramp, so it was slightly west of the ramp itself. So if you want to try to find it location-wise, so basically you're going to go to the area between the ramp and the mizbech. Remember, the ramp is on the south side of the mizbech. When we get to Talmud Amidos, we're going to be discussing the architecture and the structure in great detail. So if you're already not familiar with it, you will become familiar even better with the structure of the Mizbeach. And if you now go to the west, so that means if you're going up the ramp, that means basically it's going to be found on the left side. If you go to the west side of the ramp, here you're going to find this lul, in which now a description And once every 70 years, so along comes the young Kohanim, umivin yain karish, and there they're going to find congealed wine. Congealed wine, sure, because this wine has been being poured daily as nesachim down the pipes, and the pipes deposit into this lul. And so what you're going to experience there is you're going to find on the floor of this little compartment a lot of wine. Wine at this point in time that's been sitting there for some time. Remember now they're looking to clean it out once every 70 years, so wine's been sitting there for some time. Shudomali gule dvela. In fact, the wine is congealed at this point in time. Vistorfenosa bekdusha, and it's burnt in the azara, meaning it's going to be destroyed and it's burnt in the azara. Shenemer bekodesh hasech nesach shecher la Hashem. Kishem she nisucha bekdusha, kach srefasa bekdusha. And just like the nisuch itself, the pouring of the wine is done bekodesh, meaning in the azara, so too its burning is also going to be done bekodesh. My mashma, so before the Gemara presents its question, the Gemara just simply wants to know, how did we get to the pasuk, to the halacha? So my mashma, va'amar avina asya kodesh kodesh. So the Gemara says it's based on gzeira shava. Ksiv hacha bakodesh, it says over here regarding the wine like we just described bakodesh. Uksiv hasam visarafta sanoser ba'esh v'lo yochal ki kodesh heim. And we have the same term kodesh used in relation to nosar. That's any leftover carbon. So just like the nosar is burnt in kedusha, that's a halacha that we've gone over numerous times. So too, the nesachim are also going to be burnt by kedusha. Period. So that takes us through the brisa, the understanding of the brisa. And now where are we? So we're at the point where we started. And it seems like our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Elazar, but Rabbi Tzadok. Our Mishnah tells us that the Nesachim, after they poured down the Shisim, after they poured into the Shisim, so our Mishnah says it no longer has a status of Me'ilah. If that were correct, meaning if you just had our Mishnah, I would have said that any deposits that are now tucked away in this compartment that's underneath, so it does not have any Kedusha whatsoever. Not only do you not have to burn it in the Azara, you can make whatever usage you want out of it. It's fine. And meanwhile, our Braisa just taught us that according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok, it still has Kedusha, it still needs to be burnt in the Azara. It seems like he's not holding like our Mishnah. Okay, and it could very well be that that's the conclusion. However, the Gemara would like to try to have our Mishnah going even like Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. And the Gemara...
Why don't we say the ceremony of burning has to be done the Kedusha?
Well, the Gemara...
The thing itself doesn't have to be.
The Gemara is going to give a... What it feels is a more fundamental answer. Afilu temer Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok, the E kalat. So, the kalat, period. So the Gemara says that, well, here's what we could suggest, that according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok, he agrees with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is of the opinion that there is no Me'ilah. Now, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok says it has to be burned by Kedusha, which means that it is subject to Me'ilah. So, obviously, confusion. The Gemara says it depends. It goes like this. When you're Makdish Nesachim, obviously it has Kedusha, that's obvious. And at that point in time, it's certainly subject to Me'ilah. If you take a little swig of the wine before it goes down the Shisin, before you pour it on the Mizbech, obviously you're going to be in violation of Me'ilah. That's clear. And when you pour down the pipes of the Mizbeach, so at that point in time now, Nasa Mitzvah, the Mitzvah has been performed. And so therefore, Me'ilah has now been removed. And that's a Mishnah, and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok says, and I agree with that. In fact, we'll go even one step further. If let's say you were to catch the wine before it hits the floor of the Shisin, which is really the floor of the Azara, if you catch the wine at that point in time, you've now caught it at a point where it's no longer subject to Me'ilah. Now, if it goes all the way down to the floor and hits the floor of the Azara, it resumes its status of Me'ilah. Rashi writes over here, Afilu temer rabbanan v'yikalat, shim hichnas yadu la'avir ashitzen v'kaltan koren shiyardu l'tahom, afilu kamashmalan de'ein mo'olam b'han. So if you catch it in midair, before it gets down to the tahom, before it gets down to the base plan, the floor plan of the Azara, so then it is not going to be subject to Me'ilah, but once it hits the floor plan, it will be subject to Me'ilah. Now, that Me'ilah that it's subject to when it hits the floor, is that a Me'ilah d'Araisa? Is that a Me'ilah d'Rabbanan? Not clear from the Gemara. I could hear arguments in either direction, but anyway, but that is the explanation, and that's how Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok can go like our Mishnah. Gemara Yikadamer, the Gemara just has a slightly different version of said discussion. Yikadamer, Lema Masitzin Ka Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok, the Ikalat. Amre Lo. So, So in our second version, the Gemara starts with suggesting that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, and specifically in a scenario where you were collate, where you caught it midair. Amre, they said lo. They said not necessarily, umid rabbanan. So the Gemara says it could very well be that it's just a din derabbanan. Here in the second version of the Gemara is in fact entertaining making this distinction between a mi'ila d'arais and a mi'ila d'rabbanan. V'hakraka nasiv lo, the Gemara says, okay, but he did quote psukim, and didn't we darshan? And not only did we darshan, by the way, but we also made a gzera shava as well, a smachta. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. It could very well be that the psukim that he quoted, the drashas, were just a smachta, meaning that the din me'ila is only a din derabbanan, not a din daraisa. And it could very well be that you don't have to pit Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok against our Mishnah. He's just simply saying that there's a din me'ila on a derabbanan level, not a daraisa level. Our Mishnah was just dealing with it on a daraisa level. Another way to resolve the seeming discrepancy between Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok and our Mishnah. Adkan, that takes us now to the end of yesterday's daf. We start now with the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud. And we are, in this perek, continuing our discussion of covering those things that are subject to Me'ilah, those things that are not subject to Me'ilah, as it relates to Karban. In the previous perek, if we just take a step backwards and take a little bit of a larger look, in the second perek of Me'ilah, so we dealt with the Karbanos themselves. And we dealt with basically every type of karban, as it relates to the status of Me'ilah. Third perek, which we started yesterday, so that took us through the Chataos HaMesos, and other types of karbanos. We talked yesterday about the money of a nazir, as he sets aside his money for his nazir so he can buy karbanos. Of those karbanos, two of them are kashe kadashim, one of them is kashim kalim. The money was misappropriated. What do we say? Is there a status of me'ilah on that? That was our discussion yesterday. And we talked about the blood and wine as it relates to the mizbeach and the status of me'ilah regarding blood and wine. We are still obviously here in this third perek, continuing along this discussion of what is and what is not subject to me'ilah as it relates to karbanos. The Mishnah starts off, Disha mizbeach apanimi. So now we're talking about the inner mizbeach. The inner mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash itself, in the actual edifice itself. So what's burned on the mizbeach apanimi? Ketores. Ketores is burned daily on the mizbeach apanimi. So you're taking incense, you're burning it on the mizbeach apanimi. Obviously also you need coals, because obviously you need a fire source. The coals are taken out from the outer mizbeach, put into the inner mizbeach, so that there is fuel now to burn the ketores. So what are you going to have on a daily basis? You're going to have ashes. What do I do with those ashes? And are those ashes subject to me'ilah? That's our discussion right now. As long as we're in the Beis HaMikdash, we're also going to be covering the ashes of the menorah as well. All this is now being discussed in our Mishnah. Disha mizbeach apanimi, as far as the ashes of the inner mizbeach, v'ha menorah, lo nen v'lo mo'alin. So it is not subject to the isser of me'ilah. On the other hand, you can't get benefit from it. Right? That's the language of lo nen v'lo mo'alin, a term that we're going to use very often throughout this Masechta, meaning the isser of me'ilah is not in force, but still there's an isser of anah, one's not allowed to get benefit from it. Take a look at the first Rashi on the Mishnah, Disha mizbeach apanimi v'amenorah, hadeshen, sha'alein haya motzio, u'menicho etzo mizbeach achitzon. Makom shuhu meniach shem asadeshen shem mizbeach achitzon. V'kodem she'inichu sham, lo nenev lo mo'alin, dehacha lo kfiv v'samo, kamo shekatzo b'disha mizbeach achitzon. So Rashi does a number of things over here in terms of helping us understand. We're talking about after it's been reduced to ashes, meaning the ketores now has already been burnt. So after the ketores has already been burnt now, and we're talking about just simply the ash pile that is on the mizbeach apanimi, it's not going to be subject to me'ilah because mitzvah is done. What about the Trumas Hadeshen? We said that the Trumas Hadeshen, after the Trumas Hadeshen is taken off the Mizbech and deposited on the east side of the ramp, it's still going to be subject to Me'ilah. So Rashi over here points out, that's true. We have a drusha for that point. The Torah says word Vissamo, and I place it over there, meaning it's still going to have status even after it's being placed over there. Fine, so that's true when it comes to the Trumas Hadeshen, take it off of the outer Mizbech. But when we're talking about the inner Mizbech, we have no such drusha. So once the mitzvah has been completed, so therefore it's not going to be subject to me'ilah anymore. In terms of where it's going to be placed, well, we just saw the Rashi, and we just learned together that it's going to be placed right alongside the Trumas Hadeshen. The place where the Trumas Hadeshen is deposited, that's where these ashes are deposited as well. eventually what's going to end up happening is that there's going to be hotzah. It will be eventually taken out. Although we haven't really formally discussed this as of yet regarding the Trumas Hadeshen, was there a need to take out the Trumas Hadeshen? We're going to learn together upcoming that a miracle took place regarding the Trumas Hadeshen. It kind of just absorbed right into the ground. That's not true regarding the ashes that are on top of the Mizbeach. That required manual performance of taking them out of the Azara. But as far as the actual Trumas Hadeshen is concerned, we'll learn that later on, not in the course of today's daf. Okay, so when it comes to the ash pile that's on the inner Mizbeach and the ashes by the menorah, so one is not allowed to benefit from them, but they're no longer subject to Me'ilah because the mitzvah has been performed.
Is it obvious for the menorah?
Is it obvious for menorah?
It's not going on the Mizbeach. It's not, right?
Yeah, but it's going to be cleaned down and it's going to be taken out. And there's still Nisar Hana. I mean, that's... Okay, fine, but that might not be so obvious. And again, we're covering everything. The Mishnayos over here are covering all items that were used in the Beis Hamikdash. So the Mishnayos are just simply being thorough. Hamakdish disham betchila mo'alam ba. The Mishnah over here makes a line. It states a line, which is quite frankly a little challenging to understand. That if you are makdish the dishon originally, subject to meila. What does that mean? So Rashi over here says a pshat. A klamar, I'm reading the Rashi inside. Now the word in Rashi over here, we have it as read as lidchu. You can see on the side for lidabek. Either way, lidabek beporta v'lahachim olam bekula. The way Rashi understands this line in the Mishnah reads now like this: when you take the ashes of the inner mizbech and the menorah and you place it now right next to the Trumas Hadeshen, so what's going to happen? I'm taking ashes and I'm putting it together with ashes. Okay, now, if you think about it, so now I have a mixture of ashes. Ashes of Trumas Hadeshen plus ashes of the inner Mizbech and the menorah. Now, the inner Mizbech and the menorah, as we just got done saying, is not subject to Me'ilah because the mitzvah was done, and we don't have a special pasuk perpetuating the din of Me'ilah. On the other hand, the ashes of the outer Mizbech are subject to Me'ilah and continue to be subject to Me'ilah. We have a drasha for that. Once these ashes get mixed together, so this is the way Rashi is understanding the Mishnah. So now this mixture is going to force us to say there's a din of Me'ilah of everything because it's impossible now to separate one ash from another ash. And so therefore it's all going to be subject to Me'ilah. That's Rashi's understanding. Quite frankly, if you go back to the Mishnah and reread the line of the Mishnah, it's still, right? I've done it a couple times. It just doesn't read so well within the words of the Mishnah itself. But that's Rashi's pshat. There are other pshatim in the Mishnah. For now, I will leave it off with just saying over Rashi. Back to the Mishnah. Let's say I have birds being brought as a carbon. As we've stated numerous times, only two birds that are eligible to be brought as a carbon, a tor and a ben yona. And as we learned in the Mishnah in Chulin, they are to be brought at certain developmental stages of their growth. When it comes to the ben yona, you specifically have to get an immature bird. It's the easy way to remember because we always say ben yona. When it comes to a tor, it has to be a mature bird. In terms of distinguishing these physical points of maturity versus immaturity, the Mishnayos and Chulin try to give us a way to have telltale signs to know when we've either gone past the point of maturity, I'm sorry, when we've gone past the point of immaturity, or we are yet at the point of immaturity. Anyway, see the Mishnayos and Chulin for that discussion. Our Mishnah over here is just teaching us a very simple point. If I have a bird where it is a tor shelo yizman, it's an immature tor, which means that it's not yet fit to be brought as a karban, or it's a benyona she'avar zmanon, where it became too mature, too physically mature, where again it's no longer fit to be brought as a karban. In both these cases, lo nenem v'lo ma'olin, not subject to me'ilah because it can't be brought as a karban. However, you can't get benefit from it. Since it was mukdash, since it was sanctified, even though now it's disqualified, it one cannot get benefit from it, but there's not going to be a din of me'ilah because it doesn't file under the category of kachi hashem.
So you just get rid of them?
Yeah, you dispose of them. And you also, there's no redemption when it comes to a bird as well, which we're going to see in just a moment. Bishlama mizbech achitzon, the Gemara's discussion over here is as follows. I certainly understand that when it comes to the Adam mizbech, dechsev bevis samo eitzel mizbech, you know, the Torah says that you place it next to the mizbech. So, and I'm going to say over the Gemara like Rashi over here in terms of a pshat, There is a lengthy discussion within Tosfos in terms of how to say correct pshat in our Gemara over here. But I'm going to say like Rashi, and truth of the matter is Tosfos in one of his iterations of our Gemara does in fact say this pshat. Here the issue that the Gemara is discussing over here is a simple issue of just simply placement. Where exactly are the ashes placed? So when it comes to the Adam Mizbeach, so the Torah gives us actually very clear instruction. The Torah says that you place it Eitzel HaMizbeach next to the Mizbeach. Even as it says Eitzel next to, still we do need a little bit of Torah Shabbat Peh to tell us that it's next to the ramp, on the eastern side of the ramp, three Tfachim away from it, etc., etc. But still, the Torah gives us a very good idea of where the ashes are to be placed of the Adam Mizbeach. Now Mizbeach HaPinimi Minalan. But the inner Mizbeach, when we take the ashes out and we put it down, where does it become clear where exactly it's supposed to go? Now, we learned the Mishnah, and we already said Pshat in the Mishnah, it goes in the same place where the Trumas Hadeshen goes. But what the Gemara is now seeking is a source. How do I know that? So, Minalan. Amar Velazar Amakra, Vehisir Esmurasa Benosasa. So, the Gemara quotes a pasuk regarding the birds and certain parts of the bird that are going to be deposited. Where are those parts of the birds go, the crop of the bird, right? Feathers of the bird. So it goes next to the Trumas Hadeshen. Now, im eino inyan lemizbech hachitzon, teneo inyan lemizbech hapnimi. So the Gemara's point over here is as follows. We already have psukim that teach us this halacha, and basically what we have is repeated psukim teaching us this halacha. So the repeated psukim, what are we going to do with those repeated psukim? So what we're going to do is we're going to basically apply to something else, i.e., the ashes of the inner mizbech. So the Gemara says, why don't we just simply say that they're both talking about the outer Mizbeach, and even though we already know the ashes of the outer Mizbeach go next to the outer Mizbeach, maybe the second drush is there to teach us of its essentiality, that it's necessary to put it over there. Im kein lemakra eitzel Mizbeach, my hadeshen. So the Gemara says, it's true, but we also have the usage of the word Hadeshen that comes to teach me that not only do the ashes of the outer Mizbech, but the ashes of the inner Mizbech also are going to be deposited next to the ones of the outer Mizbech. Menor Minalan Deshen Hadeshen. As far as the ashes of the menorah is concerned, so it says Hadeshen, the extra hay, the additional hay, is coming to teach me not only the ashes of the inner Mizbech, but the ashes of the menorah as well. Not in these drushes, not in the context of these drushes. Okay, so a simple conclusion of the Gemara is that all ashes that are removed are going to be placed in the same place where the Trumas Hadeshen is going to be placed. That's the basic idea of the Gemara. Question of how to arrive at that conclusion, how do the Psukim speak out this idea, but that's the basic idea. Okay, we are in Yud Beis of Manalef. We are starting now at the Mishnah of Rabbi Shimon Omer. Torn Shalom Yigiz Manam Ma'olam Bahem, B'nei Yonashav Az Manam Lo Nenim V'lo Ma'olam Bahem. Rabbi Shimon really is a continuation of the previous Mishnah. In the previous Mishnah, we learned that if birds are not fit to be brought as a carbon, so they lose their status of Me'ila. And that goes in either direction. If our tour is immature, or if our Ben Yonah is now past the point of immaturity, it is now mature, physically mature, so they're no longer fit. So our previous Mishnah taught us that there's no longer a status, a din of Me'ila on these birds, because they're simply not eligible to be brought as a carbon. Rabbi Shimon, just give me a moment. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, disagrees with half of that. Rabbi Shimon says that when you're talking about your tour, because it is immature, but that obviously is going to change over time. Meaning if we just allow time to take its normal course, so we can go forwards, we haven't discovered ways to go backwards yet, and I don't think we will. So if you just simply allow the tour to take its time, so eventually what's going to happen is that it will become fit. Now, this is Rabbi Shimon, which immediately in my head brings out the idea of Kol HaOmed. Mm-hmm. Right? Rabbi Shimon throughout Shas takes the position of Kol HaOmed. Kol HaOmed Lisrof Kesarv Dami. And Rabbi Shimon is able to not only forecast, we're all able to forecast, especially growth and development. That's an easy forecast. But what Rabbi Shimon does is that not only does he forecast, but he bases current status based on future forecasting. So something like growth and development, which we know is going to happen, so Rabbi Shimon says we could see it right now. And so even though right now he's not suggesting that right now the immature Torah could be offered as a carbon, obviously he can't. But because we know its direction, So therefore, right now, Rabbi Shimon is going to be of the position that's going to be subject to Me'ilah. That is the Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah. I'm going to reread the Mishnah again. Rabbi Shimon Amar Torah Shalom Higiyah Zmanam Ma'olim Behen, B'nei Yonash Avar Zmanam Lonen and V'lo Ma'olim Behen. So on the Torah, even though it's immature, but still it's going to be subject to Me'ilah for the reasons we just articulated. The Ben Yonah that is past its time is not going to be subject to Me'ilah. It's not even going to be in Isra Hana as well. I'm sorry. There will be an Isra Hana, sorry. There will be an Isra Hana, but there's not going to be a din of Me'ilah. Yeah, Ben.
My question is, if this Mishnah, basically, Rabbi Shimon is arguing with Rabbanan, right?
Yes.
So why isn't it combined with the previous Mishnah? Because there's a back and forth between them. Why is it like a separate Mishnah?
It is combined with the previous Mishnah. It just happens to be that whoever put the Gemara together decided to break the Gemara up from station to station. But in terms of Mishnayos, it's a flow. It's a flow in the Mishnayos. Right. It's just whatever. I don't know who makes these executive decisions. Sometimes the Gemara breaks it, but allows the Mishnah to finish its point and then comment, and sometimes not. So
and the
Mishnah is back to back. Yeah, for real. Yeah. Right. Bishlam Rabbi Shimon can diktani taima. According to Rabbi Shimon, so good. So we understand his position. Shaya Rabbi Shimon Amar Kol Aroy LaAchrasman VeIkdishu BeSochzman No Hareyu Below Sase VeIn Bo Kares. In fact, the Gemara says not only is this Rabbi Shimon's position over here, but I can show you another place where Rabbi Shimon is going to take a similar approach. And the if let's say for example something is immature or it's premature. Let's say, for example, take a look at the Rashi over here. Shaya Rabbi Shimon Omer, Hashochet Osav Espano Kach Mechutz, Sheni Hareyu Below Sase. This takes us back to the Gemara in Chulin. We discussed this back then, but just as a quick reminder and a refresher, let's say I take a mother and its offspring and I shech the two of them as karbanos outside the Beis Hamikdash. So on the first animal that you shech, you violate Shchut Echutz. Nothing to discuss. Right, and with the full liability of Shchut Echutz, it's an Issur D'Oraisa, it's an Issur Kares, if done intentionally. So for the first animal, it is a violation of Shchut Echutz. What about the second animal? Well, the second animal, you can't shecht it today because of the prohibition of Osav Ezbeno. So for the second animal, by shechting it today, you're shechting it prematurely. And so therefore, if you shecht the second animal today, so one would not be subject to any kind of liability of Shchut Echutz because you shecht it prematurely. However, Rabbi Shimon over there takes the following position. Rabbi Shimon says that, look, even though today you can't shecht it, but tomorrow you can. So in other words, again, just a small amount of forecasting. You don't have to be a weatherman. In other words, we know, right? Forecast for tomorrow, you can shecht this animal. So Rabbi Shimon says, because of that, it's omed lishchot, and so therefore it gives it a status of shechita even today. Even though you shouldn't have shechted it for two reasons, Osav Espino and the Yisr of Shchut Echutz. But nevertheless, because of Kol HaOmed, so Rabbi Shimon says that if in fact you shechted it today, you're going to be subject to a penalty. Now, it happens to be that he softens the penalty just a little bit. In other words, it won't be subject to Yisr Kares. It'll only be a lav. But still, the fact that it's a lav is based on the fact of Kol HaOmed. Good, so it's just another reflection of this idea for Rabbi Shimon of when something stands to become something, so even now, even in its pre-state, nevertheless, it's still going to have the status.
Why don't we have Father Rabbi Shimon's opinion that he said a shechita that is not conducive to something significant is not considered shechita?
Right, you have to balance the two positions of Rabbi Shimon. Right, you have the Kol HaOmed position, you have a shechita shenerulia position. Yeah, it's an excellent point. It's a really, really good point. Only one day. One day. For Osav Espino, it's only one day. Where is Rabbi Shimon? Yeah, right. How far would Rabbi Shimon forecast? Well, by the birds, if we're talking about the development of the birds, so you could be, and I have to pretend now for a moment that I know something about birds. But I just...
You don't?
But... So but let's just say that it would take more than a day. Yeah, that I can say comfortably. It would take more than a day for a bird to mature to this point where now it's eligible. So you're right. It's a fair question. How far into the future is Rabbi Shimon ready to forecast? It's unclear. Certainly a day by Osav Espino. I'm imagining more than a day when it comes to birds. But after that, I don't know. So anyway, so fine. That's true when it comes to Rabbi Shimon. Vein bo karis ela rabana mai shem mechus zman. Amri mechus zman mida davi abamom. I'm sorry. Let me slow down just a little bit. Ela rabana mai shem mechus zman. According to Rabbi Shimon, I'm sorry. According to the Chachamim, it's no different than mechus zman. Now, what the Gemara is doing over here is it's making an allusion to halacha. The Gemara expects us to remember the halacha of mechus zman that it's making reference to. Also, the Gemara is challenging in that it doesn't give us any hints whatsoever in terms of what kind of mechus zman we're referring to. Rashi over here says as follows. Rashi says, I'm going to take us back to the point of Meiser Behema. Meiser Behema, now you remember, you collect all your animals that are born this year, you put them in a pen, you make a small opening, and you count them out as they're walking out. Now let's say of the animals that are born this year, one animal was born a day ago, 2 days ago, 5 days ago. Now we know that if it becomes the number 10 animal, right, if it wins this lottery and it becomes the number 10 animal, so at this point in time, I can't offer it as a carbon. No animal could be brought as a carbon until its eighth day. So you have an animal that was born 5 days ago. Do I put it in the pen and do I count it? And remember, we are not allowed to discriminate which animals to be number 10. We have to randomize. There is a requirement to randomize. And so therefore, that means that the 10th animal can in fact be this young animal. I say young, meaning it's not yet fit to be brought as a carbon. And if you remember our discussions back in Bechoros, the answer was an unequivocal yes. You put it in the pen and you count it out. When it's branded number 10, it's going to have the Kedusha and it can't be offered yet. And the Chachamim said, that's fine. In other words, even though right now it can't be offered, but we'll wait, and when it's ready to be offered, we're going to offer it as a Meiser Behema animal. So you see that even the Chachamim do subscribe to this idea of forecasting. And so the Gemara says, you're telling me that this is just a Rabbi Shimon position, it's also the Chachamim as well. And Maishnam in Mechus Zman, that's the Gemara's question. That why would the Chachamim not agree with this idea? It seems like they agree with this idea in other places. Amri. So in the yeshiva, after this question was asked, they offered the following answer. Mechus Zman midi dehavi abamon. When it comes to Mechus Zman is no different than just simply being blemished. The bar pigeonhu, meaning it's something which is redeemable. Meaning, Mechus Zman, albeit right now it's in a state where it is not fit, but it's no different than a blemished animal. A blemished animal has Kedusha, just simply subject to redemption. An animal that's Mechus Zman, also a form of a blemish, right? Right now it can be offered, but certainly something that can be redeemed at this point. Avahani offers, but when we're talking about birds, which is our Mishnah's discussion, Kevin de Ein Mumposo Baofos, Ein Laofos Pigeon. Well, you know, there's no such thing as a blemish as it relates to birds. Birds are not blemished. Now, Mechusar Aver, admittedly, by bird, is going to disqualify to be brought as a carbon. But just for a blemish, however, a small blemish, which by an animal would render the animal now a balmum and make it eligible to be redeemed, there is no such institution as it relates to birds. That means that when it comes to a bird is binary. Either it's kadosh or it's not kadosh. And there's none of this gray area of, well, we could view it as like kind of like a blemished animal, open to redemption. No. By a bird, it's either kadosh or not kadosh. That's why the Chachamim say that when it comes to animals, so you could talk about Mechus Zman, and it's premature, but that's still going to give it Kedusha. Because you have in animals this gray area of a blemish, an opportunity to redeem. By birds, you have no such institution. Therefore, by birds, it's either kadosh or not kadosh, and that's why the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Shimon.
Even if the bird is missing a limb.
Again, the missing limb is true. It's not going to be offered as a carbon, but it's not redeemable. It's still not redeemable. Okay, ein lofus pigeon. Amar ulam Rav Yochanan. We are now halfway down on Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and we're going to go back to something that we learned back in the first day of Me'ilah, and we get to refresh. Amar ulam Rav Yochanan, kadoshim shemesu yasu midei Me'ilah, Dvar Torah. You have a carbon. It dies. It dies, nashchita, just it died. And now it's a nevela. And as far as Me'ilah is concerned, even though as a carbon it was subject to Me'ilah, obviously we're talking here about either Echatas or an Asham or an Ola. So that means to say that it had Me'ilah, it loses that status of Me'ilah upon death. Min HaTorah. Now that's only on a Doraisa level. Midrabban is still going to be slapped with a status of Me'ilah. One's not allowed to benefit from it. Remember, we discussed that on day one of our Masechta. What was the difference between Me'ilah Doraisa versus Me'ilah Derabanan? The Gemara asked that question. The answer is that when it comes to Me'ilah Doraisa, there is Keren and Chomesh and a Karban Hashem. When it comes to Mehila Darabanan, it's only Karen. You only pay restitution of principal value, not the Chomesh and not the carbon. Obviously not the carbon. Anyway, so when our animal dies in the Beis HaMikdash, our carbon died, and so therefore it's going to lose its status of Me'ila Min HaTorah. Why is it coming up over here? You'll see. So Yosef Ula V'kamer L'Hashmaisa. So Ula now saying over the statement of Rav Yochanan, Amalei Rav Chista, Man Shamalach V'le Rav Yochanan. So Rav Chista was taken aback by the statement. He really was objecting to the statement, really strongly. He says, who's going to listen to you? Who's going to listen to Rabbi Yochanan? Meaning I'm just not buying into this. So the Rabbi Yochanan Rabcha. Let me ask you a simple question. You're telling me I had Kedusha, right? Good. And now it died. And now what? The Kedusha just dissipates? That's what happens with the Kedusha? It just disappears? And we all agree that while it was alive, it was subject to Mi'ilah. And now it's dead and the Kedusha just simply vanishes? That's not how Kedusha works. And so how can you tell me that the status of Mi'ilah just simply goes away? Amrlai Tikshimas Nisan. So in response to that challenge, so Ula says, what about our Mishnah? Which is, Torn Shalom Higiz Manan V'nei Yonah Shavaz Manan Lo Nenin V'la Ma'olin. So look at the bird. And specifically, let's take a look at the Ben Yonah. So the Ben Yonah, which you were Maktish, it was subject to Me'ila when it was eligible to be brought as a carbon. And then it gets too old. It goes through physical maturation. And now that it's too old, and now it's no longer eligible, our Mishnah told us that you're not allowed to benefit from that bird, but Lo Ma'olin. But there's no longer a status of Me'ila. Okay, and now, you know the Mishnah, right? We just learned the Mishnah together. They are Marayim, they knew the Mishnah's backwards, forwards, inside out. You know the Mishnah here. So what are you going to say about this Mishnah? So, Hachanami, name a Kedusha Shemem Leicha Halachan. And I'm going to ask your question that you challenged me with. And where did the Kedusha go? So, Amar Lei, Modin Lach Deika Me'ila Midurabanan. So he says, look, I agree with you. That there's going to be a status of Mi'ila Midrabanan. The Kashali, Mi'ika Midi Mikara Lo Isbe Mi'ila, Ulavisof Isbe Mi'ila. So he says, look, what bothers me is the following. That it bothers me that originally it wasn't subject to Mi'ila at all. And now eventually there's going to be a din of Mi'ila. Now, if you take a look at Rashi over here, again, a little bit challenging Gemara to read over here in terms of what the simple pshat of the Gemara means. But if you look at the bottom Rashi, Kashali, and I'm going to skip a little bit towards the bottom of this Rashi, last like four lines of the Rashi, right in the center of the lines. Bishlam hechad haveh b'mi'ila mi'kari midoraisa, kigon hanikashim shemesedis b'mi'ila midorabanan, libesov shapir. So he says, look, here's what I do understand. You're talking about a chatzis animal, an osham animal, an ola animal, where it was subject to me'ila on a doraisa level, and the animal died. So fine, I'm totally accepting the idea that the me'ila is gone, it's no longer kachay Hashem, it's not going to be offered as a carbon anymore. But you want to tell me that we're going to slap, the chachamim slap the din me'ila derabanan on these animals? So that part I understand. It was subject to me'ila in the Torah, and to go from me'ila doraisa to no me'ila, that's too dramatic. And people just, you know, it'll cook people's brains too much. So then I understand. However, continuing reading in the Rashi, Ava b'torin shelo higiyaz manan de b'shas hekdesh shelo havei b'hu mi'ila midoraisa de lo chazu b'kadshe ha-mi amin de lo havei b'hu mi'ila midorabanan l'besof. But now let's take a look at these birds. So let's take for example the tor. So the tor, so prior to maturity, it had no kedusha whatsoever. It wasn't subject to Mi'ila at all. Now the tor is now subject, it becomes a carbon, eligible subject to Mi'ila. And then it dies. Under those circumstances, now it started off having no Mi'ila, then a Mi'ila d'Oraisa, and then back to now just having a Mi'ila d'Rabbanan. If I look at the originality, if I look at its origination, it had no Mi'ila. So I would argue under those circumstances, it should, when all said and done, have no me'ila. So the Gemara says, "V'lo va'ika dam de mikar leis be me'ila l'sof is be me'ila." Did non dam b'tchila in ma'alam bo yatzal nachi kidro ma'alam bo. So as a counter response to that, he says, "Look, you're bothered by something that had no me'ila, and then is slapped with a din me'ila midrabanan. Look, let's go back to yesterday's daf. The blood. The blood has no din of me'ila whatsoever, as we established yesterday's daf. We reviewed in the beginning of today's daf." And meanwhile, while it spills out into Nachal Kidron, it's going to be subject to a Mi'ila Derabanan. So look, I understand that it bothers you, but it's precedented. Amrei says, Hasam Nami Ika Mi'ila Mi'kara Dama Rava Mikis Dama Behemas Kashim Masar Banal Malam Bo. So the Gemara says, I would leave blood out of the discussion. I don't think blood should be brought in as any kind of proof or precedent. Why? Because consider, when it comes to blood, let's say, for example, you have a karban, and I don't shech the karban, but just simply I pierce it, and I let some of the blood out. The blood that comes out of the karban, that is going to have a din of me'ila, and on top of that, a din of me'ila midaraisa. It's asur banal umo alin bo. It's subject to me'ila. So the blood in an animal is considered part and parcel of the animal, and therefore is going to be subject to me'ila. Now, admittedly, by the way, here I'm going to admit, it's a little bit challenging to understand this point of the Gemara. Because if you think about it, when it comes to a carbon, what is subject to me'ila? Kachay Hashem. Something that's going to go onto the Mizbeach. So, right. So if you bloodlet an animal, a carbon, and now the blood comes out, understood that the blood was part and parcel of the animal. But you're going to now tell me, you want to suggest that this blood now is going to end up going up onto the Mizbeach? Probably not. Right? And if not, definitely not. So admittedly, it's a little bit challenging to understand. But the point the Gemara is making is that don't bring this as a precedent. Blood does, to a certain degree, have status of me'ila while in the animal or while extracted from the animal via non-shechita. And so therefore, it's not a good precedent. So the Gemara says, I'm left with saying that when it comes to blood, it is slapped with me'ila midrabanan. But if you go back to the origination, there was me'ila min haTorah. You're bringing out a case where something had no me'ila and then eventually slapped with a din d'rabbanan of me'ila. That's what I'm objecting to. Gufas, we now turn to the top of Yud Beis Amud Beis. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Amekiz Dam Lebeim, Akasha Masar Banam, Olam Bo. The Gemara repeats the line of Rav Huna, that if I extract blood from an animal, non-shechita, right, we pierce the animal and we take out the blood, that blood is subject to me'ila, Mesav Rav Amnuna. So Rav Hamnuna says, you know, it's interesting. Other bodily fluids of an animal that come out of the animal are not subject to me'ila. Chalav ha-mukdashim ha-beitzei tarim lo nenev lo ma'alin. If I have milk of a carbon or the eggs of a bird that were, the animals themselves were in a state of kedusha, they were carbon ready. The milk that comes out, you're not allowed to benefit from that milk, but there is no iser of me'ila on the milk. And the same thing is true regarding the eggs that are laid by a bird, which is a carbon. There's no iser of me'ila by those eggs. How is that any different than blood? So Amalei ki kamin lagabi dam delo mitkayemet below dam. Ava chalav deka mikayma below chalav lo. So the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you the difference. In other words, blood is a life force of the animal. The Torah repeatedly describes blood as being not only part of the biological animal, but the life force of the animal as well. Ki adam hu anefesh. So when you're talking about blood, if the animal's subject to me'ila, the blood's subject to me'ila. But we're talking about milk and eggs. So these are, admittedly, they are dividends that come off the animal. They're obviously being, they're separated from the animal, but they're not the life force of the animal. What about the actual excrement of an animal? So as far as the excrement of the animal, so zevel perish, there are different types of excrement, right? Possible ways of distinguishing between the two. But for our purposes right now, let's just simply call both of them excrement. And you're not allowed to benefit from it. However, there's no din of me'ila when it comes to the excrement. And if you want, you can go to the Beis HaMikdash. You could buy it off the Beis HaMikdash, removing the status of me'ila from it, and use it in order to fertilize. So amai hachanam lo mekayim lo perish. Now the Gemara says, now you know the animal cannot exist without its excrement. Now, admittedly, another challenging line of today's daf, an animal cannot exist without its excrement, meaning to say that basically we're talking about the GI tract of the animal. And within the GI tract of the animal, obviously the animal needs to eat. Granted, right now, in terms of the excrement, we're looking at the waste product of the food, but still, that's the, right, I think that's the driving force of the question of the Gemara. Needs to eat. So Amri Ma'ir Ya Hadein Perished Minama Ka'asila. Azal Hai Asachrina La Fukidam Migufa. So the Gemara says, okay, but I'll still make a very basic distinction when it comes to blood versus excrement. When it comes to blood, the blood is generated within the body. So blood that's generated in the body, so you cannot separate the blood from the animal. The blood is part and parcel of the animal. As far as the excrement is concerned, think about where it started. It didn't start internally. It started as an external food source that was consumed by the animal. And then the animal digested whatever it wanted to digest, and now this is coming out. But this is coming out of something that originally was external, meaning originally it was food that the animal ate. So you can't compare the excrement to blood. Hakatani lo nenim v'lo malim v'dam v'lishka. It says that you're not to benefit from it. It's not subject to me'ila. So if you want, you could buy it from the, and the money goes to the lishka. Misayel al Reb Elazar, damar Reb Elazar, kol makom shamur chachamim kadosh v'enu kadosh, dam av yipul lishka. Anytime you see the expression kadosh v'enu kadosh, it is a parallel term to lo nenim v'lo mo'alin, which means that what you can do, you have now an opportunity to buy it, meaning buy it from the Beis HaMikdash. The funds, the proceeds are now going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, removing the status of the Isser Hana from this item, and you can make usage of it. Okay, let's do quickly one more. No, you know what? We have time tomorrow. I'll take it back. We'll stop over here tomorrow. We'll pick it up at the Mishnah, and we'll do the we'll just do this short section, and we'll cover tomorrow's daf. Let's just quickly recap. Today we talked about other items in the Beis HaMikdash and the status of Me'ilah. We talked about ashes of the outer Mizbeach, ashes of the inner Mizbeach, and that of the menorah, and a discussion of where exactly all that is placed on a daily basis. The next Mishnah talked about birds that are mature and immature. If a bird is not eligible to be brought because either it needs to be mature and it's immature, or it needs to be immature and it's mature, so such a bird is not subject to Me'ilah. Rabbi Shimon, however, regarding the bird that is immature, the tor, which is immature, but we're waiting for it to become mature, even at this state it's subject to Me'ilah. Why? Because it's omed lekach. And this is Rabbi Shimon, that's Rosh Hash, subscribes to the idea of omed lekach. We talked about other areas in Halacha where we have this idea of omed lekach. We're forecasting the future and we're basing current status based on a simple forecast into the future. And then we spent a good amount of time today talking again about this, about Ula, the statement of Ula. An animal as a carbon dies without a shechita, it just simply died. It's not subject to Mila Midaraisa, but it is subject to Mila Midarabanan. Rav Chista spent some time trying to understand the statement of Ula. How can we go from something from something that had no Me'ila to something that now has a Me'ila Midarabanan? And the Gemara advocated a number of cases. One last point that we discussed today, the extraction of blood from a carbon. If you shef the carbon and you're collecting the blood, so that blood is not subject to Me'ila because lekapara, or whatever, whichever drasha you want to go with, as we learned in yesterday's daf. However, you pierce an animal, a carbon, and you extract the blood that way, so that blood is going to be subject to Me'ila. Why? Because it's part and parcel of the animal, as opposed to the milk or the eggs, or even the excrement of the animal, which is not viewed as part and parcel of the animal. This is considered part and parcel of the animal, and therefore it is in fact subject to, the blood is subject to Me'ilah.